welcome. It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you broadcasts from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Settle back and enjoy sitcoms in this hour. Later on, it's The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet from 1949. But first, a broadcast of The Great Gildersleeve from NBC, heard on June 28, 1942.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve. The Kraft Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time, Harold Peary as The Great Gildersleeve, written by Leonard L. Levinson. Now let's visit our friend, the Great Gildersleeve, who's been long noted for his easygoing disposition. In fact, his disposition was so easygoing, it finally went. Uncle Mort's face has been getting longer and his temper shorter, and he's starting to throw his weight around with unpleasant results everywhere it's landed.
Oh, my goodness, Marjorie, I'm late to the office again.
Oh, good morning, Uncle Mort.
Good morning. All right, am I supposed to starve around here? Where's breakfast? Bertie, breakfast.
Yes, sir, yes, sir. What do you start off with? Grapefruit, cantaloupe, strawberries, orange juice.
What's the trouble? Don't the stores still sell prunes?
Oh, I thought you were sick and tired of prunes.
Whatever gave you that idea?
Oh, yesterday morning you flung yourself out of the house saying you're fed up, and I asked Leroy what the trouble was, and he says you're full of prunes.
Oh!
excuse me, folks, I gotta hurry to school.
Yeah, come back here, young man. School doesn't begin again until next September.
Just my luck. Oh, what am I saying?
Now, Uncle, why don't you sit down and eat the nice egg Bertie's fried for you?
That's what I'm trying to do. Bertie, what is this, a fried egg or the stopper out of the kitchen sink?
It's an egg, Mr. Gildersleeve, and it was cooked
It wasn't cooked, Bertie. It was vulcanized. I give up. Just wrap it up, and on my way downtown, I'll drop it on a scrap rubber pile. And there's going to be a war in this house, unless I start getting fed properly around here.
My, my, he's worse today than he was yesterday when he poured the coffee in his lap and then spilled the cream on his vest, thus dissolving the sugar in his pocket.
Yeah, I wonder what's wrong with Unc lately. He's been as jumpy as a kangaroo on a pogo stick.
Yes. Poor Uncle Mort.
You mean poor us. We's the one he's doing his jumping on.
You know, I think I have an idea what's troubling him.
Gee, what is it, sis?
Uncle Mort hasn't any love life.
Oh, for corn's sake. Be serious, can't you, Marge?
But I am serious. If he could only get excited about some woman, it might calm him down.
Oh, you mean he ought to get unto himself a wife?
What does he want a wife for? He's got Marge to sew on his buttons, and you to cook for him, and Judge Hooker to fight with. What more could a guy want?
I don't necessarily mean a wife, Leroy, but some attractive woman he could get interested in. Then he wouldn't have time to be irritable or critical. At least we could experiment.
Okay, but who'll we get to turn on the glamour?
Well, how about Mrs. Salisbury Twitchell?
Nope, her face has had too many retreads.
Well, what do you say to Miss Rosita Callahan?
Oh, she's got a pen like a rabbit.
Now, wait a minute, brother. Who's going to fall in love with this girl, you or Uncle Mort?
Well, gee, I was just giving you a man's viewpoint.
Well, who would you pick up?
What about Amelia Hooker?
Judge Hooker's sister?
Sure, she's awfully nice and jolly, and she makes the swellest cakes and candy.
Yes. She's a high school teacher.
Is that so? What does she teach?
Oh, she teaches girls domestic silence. Gee, this will be a cinch.
I don't know about that. You can't make a silk purse in a pig's eye. Now, building up a romance for your Uncle Mort ain't gonna be no picnic.
Picnic? That's it. We'll have a picnic on Sunday and invite Judge Hooker and his sister.
Uh-huh. And I'll make some of my famous potato salad. That ought to bring Judge Hooker.
And I'll ask Amelia to bake one of her luscious cakes. That should bring Uncle.
Yeah, and it'll probably bring all the aunts, too.
No, Marjorie, this is Sunday. The day I rest my feet. I refuse to go on your picnic.
But Why not, Uncle Mort?
Well, you've heard about nature lovers, haven't you?
Of course.
Well, I'm a nature hater. Rocks, skunks, snakes, bees, swamps, mosquitoes. You can take all of them and give them back to the Boy Scouts and tell them to give them back to the Indians.
Oh, but Uncle Mort, think of all the fun we'll have at Underwood Falls.
What fun? Grinding the rubber off our tires?
No, we're saving rubber. We're taking the excursion train.
We? Who all's going on this pickle and potato salad promenade?
Well, there's Leroy and me and Judge Hooker and his sister.
Judge Hooker, yeah. Is Amelia Hooker going too?
Mm-hmm. And she's baked the most delicious devil food cake. For you, incidentally.
For me? But why devil's food?
I guess it's because she thinks you're such a handsome devil.
Handsome devil. Who, me?
Oh, Uncle Mort, that's the first time you've laughed in a week.
Huh?
Now, come on along. You'll have fun.
Marjorie, I've told you how I feel about picnics.
Well, strange how Amelia thought you were an outdoor man. She said that you remind her of Gary Cooper.
What's so funny about that? Amelia's entitled to her opinion. Gary Cooper, eh? Gosh, I don't know what to say. Gary Cooper, huh? Well, I don't know.
Oh, why don't you join us, Uncle? We're leaving on the 10 o'clock.
Gary Cooper, huh? Excuse me, partner. Would you mind stepping away from that there mirror? Thanks. Yeah. Oh, I see what she means by Gary Cooper. Amelia was talking about the wide open spaces.
Isn't this beautiful?
Mighty pretty country hereabouts, ma'am. The air is so fine and clear. Yes. You just say the word, Miss Amelia, and I'll climb that thar tree and bring you down some eagle eggs.
Oh, no, thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, then, can I fetch you some more tater salad?
Oh, no, not another thing, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Now, Miss Amelia, no need to be formal. Just call me Throckmorton.
Well, all right, Throckmorton.
Sounds mighty like music hearing you say it, ma'am. Mind if I sit alongside of you here?
No.
Oh,
but
that's all right. Don't move. Excuse me, Miss Amelia, but whereabouts did you put that devil's food cake?
Well, I put it right where you...
Never mind. Marjorie, have you got a nice wet cloth?
Oh, Throckmorton, what a shame.
Yeah, that was a darn good cake. Why can't you be more careful where you put your circumference, you big pudding punch?
Now, Horace Hooker, stop insulting Throckmorton.
Oh, I don't mind. Come, Miss Amelia, let's wander down to the pond and look at the water lilies.
Be careful, Amelia. Don't let the big bullfrog sit on the lily pad.
Why, that little joker.
Oh, look, aren't they pretty?
Would you like some? I'll wait out and get them for you.
Oh, no, Throckmorton, you'll get your shoes wet.
Oh, no, I won't. I'll just take them off. And my socks and roll up my trousers.
Now, be careful, Uncle Mort.
Yeah, don't worry. Ooh, water's cold, isn't it?
No, Daniel Boone, it's just your feet that are cold.
I'll show you, Hooker. In just a second, Amelia. I'll have your bouquet in just a...
Morton, say something.
Can't. Probably have a frog in his throat.
Look, the Panama hat's come to the surface. It's drifting away.
That's all right. He's probably weaving another one underwater.
Oh, here he comes. Well, thank goodness.
Who put that hole there? Oh, my goodness, I've ruined all my cigars.
We'll help him out, Horace.
Look at the big flounder. Here, Gildy, take my hand.
Yeah, thanks.
Is it very wet in there?
Oh, no, Judge. Come on in, the water's fine.
Hey, let go.
Woo!
Now look what you've done. Now I'm all wet.
You're telling me.
Oh, now, boys, that's enough enough fun for one day. Come on out.
Yeah, I'm glad we meet you.
Sit down here, Uncle. Well, one thing good. Wash the cake icing off your trousers.
Gee, there must be an easier way of doing it than that.
Here, Leroy, please dry off my watch.
Okay, I'll wring it out.
My goodness, give me a towel, someone.
Why don't you just shake yourself, you little Airedale?
Look at me, I'm a mess.
Yeah, you haven't changed a bit, Judge.
Here's your watch, Unc. First, look at the time.
Oh, it's almost time for our train.
And the station's a mile away.
Hey, gather up the picnic things, Leroy.
Where's your coat, Throckmorton?
Coat? I hung it on a limb of a tree while we were playing baseball. Oh, yes, there it is.
Well, I'll get it for you. Then we must hurry up.
What's the matter, Amelia?
Look, a bird. It's building a nest in your coat pocket.
What's that? Let me see. Look, everybody, a bird's building its nest in my coat pocket.
Oh, how sweet. Well, what a pity we have to dispossess her after all her work.
Well, what are we supposed to be, the FHA? Shoo her away and let's get going.
Oh, Horace, you're too cruel.
I am not. Well, what are you going to do, leave your coat here?
Yes, by George, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
But Uncle, you'll catch cold.
No, I won't, my dear. The memory of that little mother bird's gratitude will keep me warm.
Gee, Aunt, that's the only bird in the country with a double-breasted bungalow.
All right, Sir Walter Galahad, come on or we miss the train. Help me with our stuff, Amelia.
Yes, yes, coming, Horace. That was a very sweet gesture, Throckmorton. I like that very much.
Now, now, Amelia, it's nothing that Gary Cooper wouldn't have done.
Can you carry the big basket, Aunt?
Yeah, sure.
You're leaving your coat here.
Well, my boy, in the first place, it's made a wonderful impression on Amelia. In the second place, the rest of the suit was ruined anyway. And in the third place, that bird that was building the nest was a woodpecker. And I never argue with woodpeckers in the first place.
Love, like mumps and measles, hits awfully hard when it hits late in life. And Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve has it bad. For the past week, Uncle Mort has been wooing and wowing Amelia Hooker. It's reached the stage where he's writing poetry. Now we find the Summerfield Shelley reciting a sonnet written especially for the fair Amelia.
If this were in the days of old, and I a knight so brave and bold, I'd storm your castle, Miss Amelia, and on my charger I would steal you. You like that one?
Oh, undoubtedly, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yeah, thanks, Bertie. Or do you think she'd like this one better? Two eyes of blue, cheeks soft as silk, a skin as white as grade A milk, a neck as graceful as a swan, a step as dainty as a fawn. The girl I mean is quite a looker. Her name is Miss Amelia Hooker.
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, it's hard to choose between the two of them. You sure is some versifier.
Do you mean versifier?
No, it's a fryer on account of that hot poetry you write. I bet you could get a job poetizing greeting cards.
Oh, I suppose I could, but I don't want to lose my immature standing. Incidentally, Bertie, don't mention a word about this to anybody, will you please?
Oh, no, sir.
I wanted to get your reaction, because I'm going to take Miss Amelia for a stroll through the park tonight and read her 15 or 20 of the poems I've written. There's going to be a wee fiddle moon.
Oh, there you are, Bertie. I just came over to borrow a pan to put under our sofa on account of the fellow she's calling on me tonight is such a drip.
Ew.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. How's the big romance between you and Amelia coming along?
What are you referring to, Dottie?
Oh, I heard all about your big moment. It's all over town like a newspaper in a high wind.
Where did you hear this rumor?
Well, the operator at the beauty parlor told me, and she had it from one of her customers whose sister-in-law has a maid that works next door to the judge's law clerk, and she got it straight out of Erskine Starr's column in the afternoon paper.
It what?
Mm-hmm. It said, what big businessman, size 48 stub, is that way about the charming sister of a prominent juror? It looks like a romance of April and November.
Oh,
What are you thinking about, Throckmorton?
Those crickets, Amelia. Listen to them. It's hard to believe that they can do that just by rubbing their hind legs together.
Oh, dear. Is that what you were really thinking about?
No, Amelia. I was thinking of your lips. Like twin petals of a dewy rose. Amelia, there's something I must ask you.
Yes.
Would you give me a...
Yes.
Would you... If you got a match, my cigar's gone out.
Really, Throckmorton, you shouldn't smoke so much.
I know it, but when I look at you, my heart's on fire, and I just can't help smoking a little bit. Incidentally, Amelia, I wrote a poem this afternoon. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, yes, I'd be glad to.
All right. It goes something like this. If this were in the days of old, and I innate knight so brave and bold... Well, what do you want?
Excuse me, buddy, but have you got a dime?
No. Beat it. Can't you see? I'm busy.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know you were engaged.
We're not engaged. We're just good friends. Go on, scram.
But all I ask for was a dime.
Amelia, do you happen to have change for a quarter?
Oh, no. No, I don't want a dime. I want the dime.
Throckmorton, I think the gentleman has a cold and is asking for the time.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, excuse me. Let's see. It's in 9:42.
Oh, thank you, Throckmorton. 9:42, huh? That means I've got plenty of time. Mind if I sit here for a few minutes?
No, you can have the whole bench. Kind of wet here anyway. Come on, Amelia. Let's stroll across the grass. I still think he's trying to borrow a dime.
Oh, now let's forget everything else. It's a grand night for a walk, and you were starting to recite a poem.
Oh, yes, but I had such bad luck with the last one, I think I'll try another verse. Since I met you, I've lost all care. I feel like I'm walking on the air.
You're not walking on the air, mister. You're walking on the grass.
So what?
I'm a park policeman, see, and it's against the law to trample on the turf, lounge on the lawn, or gamble on the green.
Who's gambling?
Oh, now, officer, it was purely unintentional.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't see you, girlie. Well, run along, and from now on, try to keep your father on the straight and narrow path. Bye-bye.
Why, that flat-headed flatfoot. Why can't people let people alone when people are trying to recite poetry to people?
Oh, come on off the grass, Throckmorton. Do let me hear your poem.
Yeah, all right, Amelia. I'll try another one. Let me see. Oh, yes. Two eyes of blue, cheeks soft as silk, a skin as white as grade A milk.
Well, well, well. Fancy meeting you two in the park.
I wonder if Shakespeare had to go through what I have to go through.
Good evening, Horace.
Well, go on with your conversation, Gildy. Don't let me interrupt you.
Oh, what's the use? If you'll excuse me, Amelia, I'll run along home now.
Oh, but Throckmorton, I wanted to hear the rest of the, you know.
I know. I'm going to lock myself in my room and telephone it to you. Goodbye. Never felt better, my dear.
Why are you making those painful noises?
I'm practicing some singing exercises. Don't tell anybody, but tonight I'm going to serenade Honeybun. Miss Hooker.
Oh, you've certainly been in there pitching the woo, Uncle.
Pitching the what?
The woo. Swinging a line. Making with a heartthrob.
If you're referring to my tender passion for Miss Hooker, Marjorie, yes, I've been giving Cupid the jive.
How's everything going?
Not so well. Last night I hit a snag.
You did?
Uh-huh. The snag's name was Judge Hooker.
You didn't actually hit him, did you, Uncle Mort?
If I didn't, then why is my mandolin all caved in? I smacked him right in the middle of his veranda.
But why, Uncle Mort?
Well, he made a big fuss just because I was strumming a few tunes to Amelia. Not that it was very late at night. Couldn't have been much later than 3. And he came barging out of the house in his nightgown, demanding that I hand over my mandolin. He kept yelling, "Give it to me! Give it to me!" So I finally did.
You shouldn't have done that, Uncle.
I know it. Now he's refused to let me visit his sister. Reminds you of Romeo and Juliet, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. But if the judge has forbidden you to see Amelia, how are you going to serenade him?
Well, tonight's his lodge night. He belongs to the Summerfield's nest of the International Order of Hoot Owls. In fact, he's the Grand Screech. So he should be gone by 8 o'clock.
Well, have you phoned to see if Amelia will be home tonight?
No, every time I call up, Hooker answers the phone. I'm going to try it again right now. Maybe he's gone out somewhere.
Suppose he hasn't.
Oh, I've got a scheme. I'll disguise my voice so he won't recognize me.
Uh-oh. Hello? Hello. What number is this, please?
Judge Hooker's resident.
Oh, Georgia Hooky president, huh?
No, this is Judge Horace Hooker.
Oh, you Hooker Horsey, huh? No good.
No. This is Judge Hooker. Now, who's this?
You, George Hookie, see me, Sammy.
No. Who are you?
Oh, me know that long time.
What's your name and what do you want?
I'm me, Lily. Only Lily, hand Lonely.
No, thanks. We wash our own hands.
Oh, for corn's sake. I said belly smelly.
What are you calling about?
Missy Hookie. She home, huh?
No, she isn't. Is there any message I can take?
No, Judge. Just skip it.
Gildersleeve!
Now what are you going to do, Uncle Moore?
I don't give up very easily, Marjorie. Remember, love laughs at locksmiths and jeers at jugheads like the judge. I'm going to send Amelia a box of candy with a message inside.
I read that someplace.
That should do the trick. Hey, Bertie!
Was you calling me, Mr. Gilsey?
Yes, Bertie. Are you finished with the dishes yet?
I've done the dunking, but the wiping is waiting.
I want you to take a package over to Miss Amelia for me. Smuggle it in so her brother doesn't find it, see? Now, do you think you can act as Cupid's messenger in this case?
Oh, certainly, Mr. Gilsleeve. I'm the Cupidest messenger in town.
Hey, Judge, hurry. We'll be late for the meeting.
I'm coming, Ralph. After all, they can't start until the grand speech arrives.
You're late. They're liable to elect a new one before you get there.
Oh, they couldn't do that.
Oh, no. If I remember correctly, that's how you were elected.
Yeah, but the first thing I did was to change that rule.
Yeah. Well, hop in.
Wait a second. Someone's coming to the house, I think. Oh, hello, Bertie.
Hello, Jeff.
What have you got there? Something for me?
No, sir.
That must be for Miss Amelia.
Yeah, that's it. It's for Miss Amelia.
Fine. Just give it to me, and I'll take it into her.
But I've had strict instructions to put it right in my own hand.
Well, she's upstairs, and there's no use making her come down to answer the door. I'll take it.
I don't know whether that's right for me to do it.
Well, just give me one reason why not.
Okay, I'll give you a reason, but I have to go home to get it.
Fine. Now, just a second. There's no use you lugging that package all the way home and then back here again. Just leave it with me until you come back.
All right, so here it is.
Thanks, Bertie. I'll take good care of it.
That's mighty considerate of you, Judge.
Hey, what's the idea?
That's Gildersleeve's cook. I've forbidden him to see my sister, and dollars to donuts, this package is something he sent her.
What are you doing?
Spoiling Big Gildersleeve. Well, chocolates. Have some, Ralph.
Thanks. Oh, look, a note.
Let me see. Listen to this. Dearest darling Moonflower, I've phoned and called to see you all day long. Ah, but in vain. And who has so cruelly kept us apart? Your brother, the little tinker. Something's wrong with the S on his typewriter. I'll fool him. Tonight, when old Sourpuss is playing hoot owl, I'll glide beneath your window and let the golden notes of song pour out of my throat. Your Fluffums Waffles.
Say, Judge, what are you going to do?
First, we're going to finish eating this candy. Then I'm going to get Amelia out of the house on some pretext or other. Then you and I are going upstairs and fill every pot, pitcher, and bucket in the house with water.
Why?
Well, when Fluffums Waffles pours the golden notes of song out of his throat, we're going to pour the water out of the window.
For goodness sakes, quiet, you musicians. This is supposed to be a serenade, not a stampede.
Yeah, quiet, fellas.
Yeah. Now, you boys hide in the bushes while I tiptoe up in the porch. You get it? I'll let you know when I'm ready.
Okay, Mr. Gildersleeve. Come on, boys.
Yeah. Well, take it easy and be quiet, boys.
Ah, Amelia, light of my life, list to my song of love. Just a little love, a little kiss. Just an hour that holds a world of bliss. Eyes that tremble like the stars above. And the
it's me, Gildy. Yes. I hope you're dripping wet, you great big drip.
Is that so? Well, you never touched me. I was here in the porch swing all the time.
Yeah, but you got the whole band. We're all doused. Yeah, that's right. Now, let's hurry, fellas, right, to make all that noise.
Oh, by the way, Hooker, that's the policeman's band.
What?
Fix yourself up pretty, Judge. You're about to have visitors.
I don't care. At least my sister never got to hear you.
Oh, no? Who do you think this is sitting in the porch swing with me? Rudy Valley?
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been our last broadcast before our summer vacation. Before we go, I'd like to express my sincere appreciation to the Kraft Cheese Company for a most pleasant year. Also, my deep thanks to our writer, Leonard Levinson, and to the members of the cast for their able assistance. Walter Tetley, who plays Leroy, my nephew, Loreen Tuttle, my niece, Marjorie, Lillian Randolph, who's Bertie, Earl Ross as Judge Hooker, Paula Winslow as Dottie Dobson, and William Randolph Mills, our musical director, and Cecil Underwood, our producer. I am proud to announce that during the 8 weeks we'll be off the air, the United States government will take over our half hour to bring you the Victory Parade. Each of the top NBC shows is contributing one program to this series, so be sure to listen in. I hope you all have a pleasant summer, and now, good night.
Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by William Randolph. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again August 30th at the same time for the further adventures of The Great Gildersleeve.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Great Gildersleeve, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from June 28, 1942, from NBC, part of their Sunday evening lineup at 6:30. At that time, 18 million people tuned into that episode, making it the second highest-rated comedy drama of the era. The first was NBC's Aldrich Family. You're listening to an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, probably more popular on television, but this ABC broadcast from October 28, 1949.
The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, transcribed and starring the entire Nelson family, Ozzie, Harriet, David, and Ricky. When you call a Nelson house and you hear this, it means one of four things. David is talking to a girl. Ricky is talking to a girl. Ozzie's talking to the phone company about the bill. Or Harriet has finally gotten hold of the phone. And I guess this is Harriet's lucky day.
Yes, Clara. It's a little shop on High Street called Norma's Thrift Shop. But you ought to sell it. You just can't throw that beautiful gold lame dress away.
Harriet, is that the dress that...
That's the one. Well, there's no reason to be embarrassed about it, Clara. If you need some extra money, take my advice and sell the dresses you don't want.
Harriet.
Well, that's what I'd do if I were you.
Harriet.
Ozzie agrees with me, don't you, Ozzie?
Harriet.
All right, Clara. Well, let me know what you get for it. Bye.
Harriet.
All right, dear, you can have the phone now.
I don't want the phone.
Well, I wouldn't have hung up so soon if you hadn't been saying Harriet, Harriet, Harriet.
Harriet.
We're getting nowhere, dear. What are you trying to tell me?
Harriet, I'm surprised at you.
What was I doing?
Giving Clara Randolph some advice.
Well, what's wrong with that? She needs some extra money to buy a coat, so I suggested that she sell some of her nice dresses she has around and doesn't wear anymore.
Well, I don't think it's up to you to tell her what she should do with her wardrobe. Besides, Joe Randolph liked that slinky gold lame dress.
Yes, but Clara's put on a little weight and it doesn't fit her slinker anymore.
Nevertheless, you shouldn't give people advice.
Why not?
Well, it always gets you into trouble. If they follow your advice and things turn out wrong, they always blame it on you.
Yes, but I don't give that kind of advice.
Well, you certainly do. I've heard you advising your friends on all sorts of things.
Well, it's good advice.
Harry, you just can't make snap judgments for people over the telephone. Advice can only make enemies, and I wouldn't give any.
Is that your advice?
That's my advice. Harry, I never give advice. I'll admit I used to, but I don't anymore.
Well, don't get upset.
Well, believe me, I know what I'm talking about. It's been my experience that when you give somebody advice, it always turns out wrong. Remember that time I advised Herb Dunkel to cancel his accident insurance?
When was that?
Right before he slipped and broke his leg. Didn't speak to me for 2 months.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Pa.
Oh, hello, Dave.
Hello, dear. What's the matter?
Oh, nothing.
You don't look very happy.
I'm just fed up with Stan Wilson.
What's he done?
Well, all last term he kept asking Betty Watson if he could take her to the prom, and she kept turning him down. I told him he was too anxious and he ought to wait a while. So this term, he followed my advice and didn't ask her until last week. In the meantime, she'd made another date, and now he blames me.
See, there you are, Harriet. There's a perfect example of what I've been talking about.
What have you been talking about?
Giving people advice. You only lose friends. It's exactly what happened to you, David.
Well, no, it isn't. Stan was never my friend.
There's no chance of his ever being one now.
Oh, I don't care. If I wanted him for a friend, he'd have been one long ago.
What I'm trying to impress on you and your mother is that you just shouldn't give advice gratuitously. You understand?
Everything except gratuitously.
I don't know either. If Mom hadn't asked, I would have.
Well, if you want to know what it means, I'd advise you to look it up in the dictionary.
How can you gratuitously advise him to look up gratuitously in the dictionary when you're against anyone giving advice gratuitously?
Well, you know, I mean that in regard to important things. Money, domestic problems. If I'm not mistaken, there's a quotation. Ricky, are you in the den?
Yeah, Pop.
Would you bring me a copy of Lord Chesterfield's letters?
Regular or king size?
That book with a yellow cover.
Oh, yeah, I see it.
Harry, if I remember correctly, Lord Chesterfield made a very shrewd observation about advice in one of his letters to his son.
Here it is, Pop.
Yeah, how are you going to find it?
Well, I spilled some water on the page and it's wrinkled. Now, here it is. Advice is seldom welcome, and those who want it the most like it the least. In other words, people say they want advice. When you give it to them, they're angry.
I'm convinced, Your Lordship.
What is the value of having a good knowledge of English literature? You can always use it to prove a point.
Oh, here's another one. Wear your learning like your watch in a private pocket, and do not pull it out and strike it merely to show that you have one. What time is it, dear? Yes, I understand the whole problem, Helen, but I just can't give you any advice.
Good girl, Harriet.
But, Helen, let's put it this way. Suppose I called you up and told you that my best friend gave a luncheon and didn't invite me. What would you advise me to do?
Harriet.
No, I wouldn't do that. No. No. Yes, that's right. That's what I'd do. Well, thanks for the advice, Helen. Bye.
Harriet, you cheated.
No, I didn't. She gave me advice. You heard me ask her what I should do if my best friend didn't invite me to a luncheon.
Well, nevertheless...
Come on in, Thorny.
Come in, Thorny.
Hello, Harriet. Hi, Oz.
Hello, Thorny.
Harriet, you're just the one I'm looking for. It looks like rain, and Catherine's not home. Think I ought to take our wash in?
Oh, don't ask me. I don't want to lose my friend.
What's the matter with Harriet?
Nothing.
Oh, she's probably tired. You ought to take her out to dinner tonight.
Thorny, when I want your advice, I'll ask for it.
Okay, Oz, don't get mad. I still love you.
I'm not mad at you.
Good. Then I'll help myself to a cigar.
Hey, get your hands out of there.
Didn't last very long, did it? Mind if I smoke my pipe?
No.
Got any tobacco?
Thorny, what did you come over here for?
Looks like nothing. Oz, you're a pretty good businessman.
Thank you.
You'd have to be. You're such a cheapskate.
All right, have some tobacco.
Oh, thanks. What is this you're smoking? Shredded wheat?
Fill your pipe and come to the point. Not your pouch, your pipe.
Say, Oz, what do you think of the new cars?
Well, most of them are pretty nice.
Do you ever think of trading that old clunk of yours in and getting a new one?
Yes.
I've been thinking the same thing. I can get a pretty fair deal on a trade-in, or I can put about $75 for the work into the old car and drive it another year. What do you think I ought to do?
Thorny, are you asking me for advice?
I know it sounds ridiculous, but I am.
Well, I'm sorry, but I can't advise you.
Oh, come on now, Oz. You're an expert on everything. Just ask anybody, especially you.
Not that I can't advise you, but... Well, to quote Lord Chesterfield, advice is seldom welcome, and those who want it most like it least.
What does that mean in round figures?
It means if I told you to buy the car and you bought it and weren't happy with it, then you'd be sore at me.
Oh, you're advising me not to buy it, that I should keep the old car another year.
No, I'm not.
Well, then I should buy it.
So what I'm trying to say to you is I won't give you any advice.
Look, Oz, I can understand you're not giving cigars or tobacco, but advice is free. I should think you'd be throwing it around like crazy.
Oh, Tony, I want to keep your friendship, and that's why I won't give you any advice.
What kind of a friend are you?
Believe me, Thorny, this is the only way to preserve our friendship.
Well, I don't want to preserve it if I can't even discuss my problems with you.
Then now, Thorny...
I know what's wrong with you. You're chicken. You're afraid to give an advice. Well, even if you did give me any advice, I wouldn't take it. So long, you spineless jellyfish. Oswald, George Nelson.
That's right.
Oh, by George, Oswald, it's good to see you.
Well, gee, I'm sorry. Just a minute now.
Oh, don't remember me, huh?
Well, I know your face. Give me a hint.
Rutgers?
Oh, yeah?
You don't remember Kappa Beta Phi and the old Rahway Inn? We were initiated together.
Oh.
Now, I say to you, the train is in the station, and what do you say to me?
Oh, woo-woo!
Brother Nelson!
Oh. How about that? Good old Kappa Beta Phi. Come on in, brother.
Yeah.
I see we have a visitor.
Yeah, Harriet, yes. Kappa Beta Phi brother of mine. This is my wife.
How do you do?
Oh, this is a pleasure indeed.
What fraternity did you say?
Kappa Beta Phi. It's sort of like Phi Beta Kappa, kind of an honorary society, you might say, but more secret.
Yeah. Great bunch of guys, eh, Oz?
Oh, the best.
You never told me about it, dear. Won't you come in, Mr.
Yeah, it was so secret we never mentioned the other members' names.
That was in college. You can tell her now, Oz.
No, sir. When I swear an oath in blood, I never break it.
All right, I'll tell her.
Well, okay, but it's on your conscience, not mine.
My name is Henderson, Toby Henderson.
You'd never get me to say it in a million years.
Thank you. Well, Oz, I guess you're wondering why I dropped in on you out of a clear blue sky. That's just what I did. I'm just between planes.
Well, I must admit this is a pleasant surprise, Tubby.
Toby.
I get right to the point. You remember in our sophomore year, we were sitting around having a Coke at the drugstore, and I said to you, Oz, I can't make up my mind what to major in. Do you think I ought to try accounting or advertising? Then you gave me your advice.
He did?
He certainly did.
Well, you know how it is. I was just telling Harriet this morning that giving advice is a bad idea.
Well, it's a little late for that now. I did exactly what you told me to do.
But it was just one man's opinion, and you can't blame it on me. After all, we were practically kids.
Why, it was the best advice I ever had.
Oh, well, good.
Because of your husband, Mrs. Nelson, I went into the advertising business, and fortunately, I've managed to do pretty well.
Well, isn't that nice?
And we probably advertise a great many of the products you use in your everyday life. Yes, sir, Oz? I'll never forget what you did for me. And all these years, I've wanted to repay you.
Are you still doing okay?
Well, you're darn right. Thanks to your early advice. Well, I've always felt that I'd like to pay you back. And I think I've finally figured it out. I'm going to repay you in kind, Oz. I'm going to give you a piece of advice that's just as good as the advice you gave me.
Well, that's very thoughtful. What's the advice?
Now listen carefully now, Oz. One of our big accounts, Maxwell Chemical, has bought out a small corporation, the Anderson-Dixon Company. Well, the whole thing's very hush-hush, you see. And it won't be announced until Tuesday. When the news does come out, that Anderson-Dixon stock is going to go up at least 8 points, maybe more.
Say, that's really something to know.
Oz, old boy, take my advice and beg, borrow, or steal every cent you can and buy Anderson-Dixon. Uh-oh, that's my cab. I told him to let me know when we had to leave to get back to the airport.
Well, gee, Tubby.
Toby.
I certainly appreciate this.
Think nothing of it, and keep it to yourself. And the next time I see you at the Rutgers reunion, I expect you to drive up in a solid gold Cadillac. So long, Oz. So long, Mrs. Nelson.
So long, Toby.
Tubby.
Well, that was certainly a nice gesture, wasn't it?
Yes.
I'd forgotten him entirely.
So I gathered.
Isn't that funny? I don't even remember giving him the advice, and he says it influenced his whole life. What was the name of the stock?
Anderson Dixon.
You think I ought to buy some?
Don't look at me. I took your advice too, dear. I never give advice anymore.
According to popular understanding, advice is an opinion recommended or offered as worthy to be followed. Well, according to Ozzie Nelson, advice is what you don't give any of to anyone unless you want to make an enemy of who was a friend. Now, of course, Ozzie never put it quite that way, and something has just happened which may mess up his whole theory. In college, Ozzie gave some advice to a friend who took it and became successful. Now, in return, he's given Ozzie a surefire tip on a stock. And since the man is a fraternity brother and a friend, Ozzie, who's a trusting soul, is checking up on him.
Hello, is this Max and Henderson and Rubicam? I want to talk to Mr. Henderson. Oh, he is out of town. Tell me, is he a tall, thin man who went to Lehigh?
You know he's a short, stout man who went to Rutgers.
Oh, he's a short, stout man who went to Rutgers. Tallies perfectly with your description of the man who was here, Harriet. Oh, thank you very much. Just tell him I called. No, you don't need my name. I know who I am. Oh, that'll confuse her.
Yeah, that was pretty clever.
Well, I couldn't let him know I was checking up on him.
Well, is he who he said he was?
Yes, and I'm surprised.
I'm surprised, too.
Well, why should you be? The man comes here, he tells me who he is, and he's who he is.
Then why did you have to call New York to find out?
Well, it just didn't seem possible he could take my advice and do so well.
Why are you so suspicious of him? You were good friends in college, weren't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember once he asked me about... No, that was another fellow, and they got divorced later.
Like an interesting episode. Tell me more.
No, it was nothing. Strangest thing, though, you know, the moment I saw this Tubby Toby guy, I knew him, but I didn't know, well, but when he put his left hand in his right pocket and said the train is in the station, and I said, woo-woo, I knew him.
You'd have to.
He's got a sensational rating in Dun & Bradstreet. He's the vice president of an advertising agency. How about that? Take advertising, I said. There's a tremendous future in it. You'll make a lot of money, I said. It's big business. You'll clean up, I said.
How can you remember what you said when you can't even remember who he is?
Well, it's sort of coming back to me now. You know, it's like a Hungarian dinner. It takes a while, but it's...
Do you think that stock market tip is any good?
Well, I looked up the stock in the paper. The last quotation was 4 1/8. Not very expensive. Harriet, do you think we ought to just...
I'll have dinner out and go to a movie. It's a wonderful idea.
No. I'm talking about the stock. You think I ought to buy some?
I told you before, dear. Please don't ask me for any advice.
I just don't know what to do about that stock. Harriet, do you think... Harriet? Are you asleep?
Yes, dear.
Well, go back to sleep. Harriet, how can you lie there sleeping when I've got this problem?
Who's sleeping? Well, maybe if I state the problem for you, it'll clarify things. Now, if you decide to put some money into that stock, you're going to be worried that it'll go down, aren't you?
Yes.
And if you decide not to invest any money, you're going to be worried that the stock will go up, aren't you?
Naturally.
Do you really want my advice?
Well, I told you yes.
my advice to you is stop worrying and go to sleep.
For goodness sake, what are you doing up so early?
I couldn't sleep.
Oh, your conscience is bothering you, huh? And it ought to. Yesterday, I wanted to buy a new car. I came over to see you for a little advice, and all I got was a pipeful of tobacco and a lecture. I don't know which was staler.
I'm sorry, Thorny, but I'm faced with a problem. Let's put it this way. Say this a friend of mine, whose name I'm not at liberty to reveal, needs some advice. You see, an old college friend of this friend of mine dropped in on him yesterday and gave him a real inside tip on a stock that's sure to go up at least 8 points. And my friend doesn't know whether he should put all his savings in it.
How much money have you got?
How'd you know it was me?
Well, because when you said you had a friend, it had to be you. You're the only friend you've got.
Funny, I'm serious. This is a real legitimate tip. Now, what do you think I ought to do?
Well, what's the name of the stock?
I can't tell you that.
And I can't give you any advice.
Well, why not?
Well, how can I tell you whether to buy something or not when I don't even know what it is?
Well, yeah, I suppose that's right.
Well, of course it's right. What's the name of the stock, pal?
I don't know if I should tell you.
You want my advice, don't you?
Well, yes, but what do you know?
Oz, I read Fortune magazine every time I go to the drugstore. Catherine's father in Schenectady subscribes to the Wall Street Journal. And I got a cousin who erases the blackboard in a stockbroker's office. Now, could you ask for better qualifications?
Well, I'm not much impressed, but all right. The stock. The stock is the Anderson-Dixon Company.
Barney! What about the advice?
Oh, yeah. Better put on a coat. It's cold out there.
Anderson-Dixon Company, huh? Well, it's a small company. The stock has been more or less inactive for years. As a broker, I wouldn't recommend buying it.
But I've got a real good tip.
Oh, Mr. Nelson, I get tips every day of the week.
But this is really inside information.
Oh, yes, of course. It always is. Take my advice. If you want to invest in stocks, do it on a good, sound, logical basis, not on a tip. Tips.
But I thought it...
I hope you haven't told anyone else about this.
Well?
Even though my business is giving advice, I try to give as little as possible. Believe me, you don't know how easily bad advice can make an enemy. Lord Chesterfield says...
Yes, yes, I know him very well.
Hello? Oh, hello, Mr. Thornberry.
Thornberry? Oh, give me the phone, quick. Hello, Thorny, don't buy it. Don't buy it. Where have you been all afternoon?
Oh, I had some things to do. Here's the evening paper.
Oh, thanks. Where's the financial page?
In the back, I think. I went down to Norma's thrift shop with Clara Randolph. She sold them 15 dresses.
Harriet, I told you not to get involved in that.
And I sold my old beaver coat and some of my dresses.
What did you... Oh, no.
What's the matter?
That Anderson-Dixon stock I didn't buy, it went up 10 points. My gosh, that's Thorny. I advised him. I told you you can only make an enemy by giving advice.
Come in, Thorny.
So there you are, Lord Chesterfield.
Now hold it, Thorny.
My friend, you're probably sitting here adding up the money you made on that stock you talked me out of buying.
No, Thorny, I didn't buy any either.
I could be driving a new car if it wasn't for you. I ought to sue you.
For what?
For being so two-faced. You advised me not to buy it. But Herb Dunkel bought some, and Joe Randolph was in on it.
Well, how did they find out? I never spoke to them.
160, 170.
Harriet?
Well, dear, it sounded like a good tip to me, so I decided to invest some of my dresses in it. Claire and I met Mrs. Dunkel at lunch, and then I went to the stockbroker's office, and they followed me. The next thing I knew, their husbands were waving checks around, and it was just one of those things. 180, 190.
Hey, there's Catherine going into the house. She's loaded with packages.
Oh, we met her on the way to the stockbroker's office, too. Thorny, you didn't even tell her about the stock.
Well, naturally, she'd never let me take my money out of our account. She's no fool. Hey, I wonder how much she invested.
Catherine!
195, 200, 210. Not bad for a small investment.
Gee, if I'd have invested some real money, I could have.
You could have lost it, too, dear. You see, you were right about the advice. Because if you had asked me for advice, I would have said not to buy it. And right now, you'd be pretty angry with me.
Well, I suppose so. But if I were the kind of a guy who gives advice, I would have advised you to buy it.
Then we wouldn't have anything.
Why not?
Dear, after all these years, you know me better than that. I never follow your advice.
This is Vern Smith saying, tune in again next week for another transcribed adventure of Ozzie and Harriet, starring Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hilliard.
The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 28th of October, 1949, an ABC episode. And that wraps up this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.